Welcome back to this week's Off the Bench podcast from the Premier League. I'm Gianni Battici.
And I'm Oscar, FPL Focal.
Hey, Oscar, it was a massive chip week. And I know you were on a chip and I was too. We had 812,000 triple captain chips played. It's the most ever in a single game week. Obviously, it's double chips this season. Meanwhile, 750,000 hit the wildcard button, 178,000 played the free hit, and 157,000 played the bench boost. So first and foremost, what chip did you have active and how did it go?
Yeah, I used the wildcard, which went pretty well, actually. I had a choice between using three transfers, because I had three rolled, to sell Salah for Haaland to target that Burnley fixture, or I had the option to wildcard, because, of course, the transfers roll over. So I did that, and I added, you know, the likes of Gabriel, Senesi, Semenyo, who I wouldn't have been able to get to with those three moves. So they all did pretty well for me. I think it was 70 points all out. So, yeah, I'm glad with that. Three transfers to take forward. I've got the bench boost active as well for game week 7. Did you use a chip?
Yeah, I went triple captain, which I'm surprised actually. I didn't realise that was the most popular chip played last week. I thought wildcard as my edge it, but yeah, 812 triple captain, 750 on the wildcard. From like 12 million managers. So a huge amount of engaged managers, they're hitting those buttons. And yeah, that's the only reason I didn't wildcard. My team probably needed a wildcard, but I just really fancied Haaland versus Burnley and thankfully that came off. And I'm probably therefore going to wildcard in 7. But I used all my free transfers to get to Haaland. So yeah. I had the win from the Haaland points, but I don't, unlike you, have the transfers moving forward. So yeah, a good week. And we'll talk Haaland early on. And obviously we're going to be reviewing all the games and talking all the big headlines, looking forward as well to players like and teams like Arsenal, who definitely need our attention now. So let's crack on with that analysis from game week 6. Oscar, I feel like we have to start with Man City 5, Burnley 1, because yes, it was the Haaland show, but I think we also probably need to have eyes on players like Reinders, Foden, and maybe even more so now, Doku. Pep Guardiola said, I have the feeling that Doku's decision-making in the final third has improved. Yeah, definitely has. Assist goals, seeing the channels, he's incredible threat against the teams with the low block. Really important. If we get to a position where Doku is starting, I don't know, 8 out of 10 Premier League football matches, and the way he's playing, you can see that, 6.5 million, he could be insane value, couldn't he?
Yeah, if it's 8 out of 10, I suppose he could make up for the benchings. But I've always struggled to trust wingers playing for Pep. It's just so unpredictable, isn't it, who he's going to start each week. So for me, I've got Reinders, I've got Haaland. And I actually went Vardy, who of course conceded anyway. That was disappointing against Burnley. I think they were the best team, in fact, for expected goals. Conceded last game, but no clean sheet there. I decided to go for that, which feels a little bit more trustworthy. I think I could trust Vardy to start pretty much all games. Reinders has started every game and likewise Haaland. So that's the triple up I've gone with. But yeah, I think Doku's an interesting one. Some people went for Foden. By the way, I have to ask you, because as the stoppage time rolled over to 90 minutes, Haaland just had the assist. So how did you feel after he got the stoppage time brace? 16-pointer, right? 48 as triple captain it was.
Oh, honestly, my palms were getting sweaty. I was actually driving and I was listening to 5 Live in the car, and I was driving really slowly because I knew I was about to get home with about 5 minutes left, but I didn't want to turn the audio off. So I was crawling along a country lane, and then I heard Haaland scored, and they just missed a big chance before that, and they went to the Etihad, and I was like, oh, this just isn't going to happen. I'm getting an assist and that's it. And when City score 3 goals, you expect Haaland to have one of the 3. But then, of course, 2 goals in like 4 or 5 minutes. Awesome. I feel like I feel like I've not had a big triple captain return in years. Yeah. So for so many that played the chip, yeah, I feel like it was probably coming. But of course, when you're going into the 90th minute, you don't expect it. So Haaland, fair play. He benefited from a couple of defensive errors, but obviously elite finishing, and that's just what Haaland's doing this year, isn't it? He looks really hungry, really motivated. And some said he won't get 90 because he's had the back issue in Champions League. I always felt like this was a game where he felt he would get his numbers up. We can't forget Haaland didn't get the Golden Boot last year. He finished 3rd in the Golden Boot race. There's an ego there. He wants to be winning individual awards as well as team awards. And he'll look at fixtures like Burnley and go, this is where I get my numbers up. And we saw that late in the game.
Yeah, 1.41 XGI, took 7 shots. All of those were in the box. Yeah, the triple captain chip's always been proper hit and miss for me. Last season, I used it on Haaland as well. That was when he had Southampton home and he ended up...
I did the same.
Yeah, he scored, to be fair, but it was just the 6-pointer, which feels quite disappointing.
Do you remember his XG in that? Chip. 2.2, I think it was.
It was something like his second highest ever, right? In a single match in the Premier League. Crazy. So I just hope to get anything close to what you got when I use mine later in the season. And I have already been looking at where I might use it. Like game week 13, Haaland's got Leeds home. Game week 15, he's got Sunderland home. I don't think Sunderland is the fixture we thought it was going to be this season, because they were the weakest of the three that came up. But I think they might be the strongest of the three, which is maybe a bold take. But also in between those two game weeks, Salah's got Sunderland home in game week 14. But obviously, I'd want to see a lot more from Salah before I consider triple captaining him. But yeah, there are other opportunities, and I'll just have to hope to get anything like what you did with 48 there.
Yeah, you're right. There's a fair few good opportunities. And Haaland plays, as you say, all three newly promoted teams. He is at home before game week 19. He's played one, the other two now, which I think is great. You want the home advantage on triple captain, I always think. Phil Foden, Oscar, a few wildcarded him in. He's got previous against Brentford. He faces them next. You could argue he was unlucky versus Burnley. Esteve scored the own goal, which took off Foden's toes. On another day, Foden has a decent return. Do we look at him and go rotation risk moving forward, a bit like Doku? Or do we go the way he's playing, he's undroppable at the moment? I mean, Marmoush and Cherki have been out, but they'll be returning soon. And I wonder if that, or them coming back, eats into Foden's minutes. Or is he just playing so well that now Pep's always going to play him in one of those sort of number 10 position central?
Yeah, I think you hold him for at least the next couple of games. Brentford away is nice. Then they've got Everton home. That's nice. And then reassess after that when you've got Cherki and maybe Marmoush returning. I think their return dates are different, but one will be back after the international break. So yeah, I think it's one of those. You keep them for the next couple of game weeks, Foden. Yeah, very unlucky to get a blank really in that fixture. Five goals and no involvements from Foden. Of course, Reinders as well. But yeah, I'm glad I made that switch to Haaland. Like, to put it into context, right, he's on 7.43 expected goals this season, which is more than the following teams have managed collectively with all their players added together. Bournemouth, Tottenham, Forest, Fulham, Leeds, West Ham, Sunderland, Wolves, Newcastle, Aston Villa and Burnley all haven't collectively reached as much XG as Haaland has on his own this season.
That's mad. I mean, he ranked, going into game week six, he would have been the seventh best team. So yeah, he's still around seventh, which is unbelievable. And he's not had a penalty this season. Again, you get a big XG for pens. And I think going into game week six, second in the XG list was Bruno Fernandes, probably still second. And he's had, he's had two to three penalties. Haaland is clear and away. And I feel like if you don't have him in your team, you get there. Let's move, I guess, away from City and go to your team, Oscar, because Arsenal are now the talking point, I feel like, in FPL. When you filter any difficulty rater by attacking difficulty, Arsenal are top. Whether you're looking for the next three game weeks, five game weeks, or if you're going all the way up to AFCON game week 16, Arsenal are still ranked best for fixtures. And they've got, obviously, brilliant players. All those on wildcard went double, if not triple up. If you haven't wildcarded or you don't have Arsenal, should they be your focus this week?
Yeah, I think they've got to be, right? West Ham home next. I mean, that's Nuno's West Ham now, so we'll have to see if there's a response. Of course, they got the point on Monday night, but I think it's got to be the priority, right? The fixture run for Arsenal is West Ham, and then it's Fulham, Palace, Burnley, Sunderland, and then it's Tottenham for the North London Derby. So, yeah, they were an absolute lock for me on the wildcard triple Arsenal. I think the interesting one is, how do you triple up if you're wildcard this week, like you're considering? Do you go double defence with Raya and then probably Gabriel, maybe other defenders like Timber, Calafiori, but I think Gabriel's the best, which is why I went for him. Or do you go for Saka, who's obviously back from injuries, played a couple of games, his minutes are improving, Madueke's out for a while. Have you looked at it much yet in terms of what you might do with your setup on the wildcard if you go for it?
I know I put together a free hit draft this week, and Saka, Gyökeres were absolutely the play for me. It was like double Arsenal attack and one defender. But on a wild card, I feel like if I'm playing the long game, I want double defence, because I just know how good Arsenal are at the back. And Raya feels like a set and forget. And then going without Gabriel feels really dangerous, because he's got the goal threat, as we saw against Newcastle. And, he scores that goal against Newcastle, and it's a 9-point goal, because you get the six points straight away for the goal, but then you're getting three bonus points with that, pretty much, because he's so good in all the underlying bits as well. So a huge, huge haul for him. Obviously, defensive contribution points as well for Gabriel. So I feel like I'd go double defence. With the three you went for, Gyökeres, Gabriel and Raya on wildcard?
Yeah, which obviously makes it tricky because if I want to get to Saka, I'm going to have to sell Raya or Gabriel. And I don't really feel comfortable doing that. So I think I'll probably just stick with those for a while. My mate was winding me up in a group chat, as you do on match day. He was saying, imagine paying $6 million for Gabriel. And this was when I was like, yeah, he's got DEFCON points. And I was saying to him, how much did you pay for Pedro Porro? He was benched. What? And then, of course, he went quiet after the very late goal from Gabriel there. Yeah, 13-pointer. Yeah, if I was going to recommend any Arsenal defender, I think he's by far the best just because of his nailedness, and he's got the most goal threat in terms of those set pieces and corners. So, yeah, he'd be my pick. There was a penalty, of course, that Gyökeres won, but it was overruled. And Saka had the ball in his hand. And, you know, sometimes players hold it in their hands and then they give it to the actual taker right before they go to take it. I guess that's like a psychology thing. I don't actually know the exact reason. So we'll never know 100% who's on penalties, but I think it might be Gyökeres. What do you reckon?
It's become fashionable, that, holding the ball, passing it on. It's a bit like the draft excluder in the wall with a player lying under it. In the last couple of seasons, it's become the thing. Same with long throw-ins this season. But holding the ball before a penalty and passing it to your teammates, happening for most teams. Apparently Arteta has done it more than most in the last couple of seasons. Like it's literally every Arsenal pen. So I'm probably of the mindset that, yeah, it would have gone to Gyökeres. But I really wanted that piece of information. And I felt like that bit of information was going to be key for those that had held the wild card. I was ready to tweet going, at least, you know, saving the wild card is a good thing, because we now know that new information on, say, Graham Potter sacking, that maybe makes West Ham defenders more attractive under Nuno and Arsenal penalty takers, but we didn't quite get the answer there. But I think Gyökeres, I feel like if he is on pens, and let's say there's a 50% chance he is, but I think it's probably slightly higher than that, then at his price point, it feels so good, because I feel like Gyökeres is going to be a bit of a flat track bully versus weaker opposition. And we've seen in his career, he's always done well against the middling or the lower league opposition. Same in Portugal. A lot of his big hauls, his braces, his hat tricks, obviously, as you would expect for a striker, came against bottom half opposition. And this season, his returns have come against Leeds and Nottingham Forest. And when you look at the fixtures moving forward, there's a lot of those opportunities to be a flat track bully against weaker opposition. So Gyökeres is absolutely going to be on a wild card team. If I don't wild card, I'm still buying Gyökeres. Gyökeres, I feel like, is absolutely needed. He'd be my transfer in this week. And Saka's minutes, I feel like, because of Madueke's injury and because Saka has had this ongoing issue, Arteta's being a little bit more careful with him than perhaps he has been in the past. In the past, we've seen him arguably rushed back or rushed back given 90 minutes. I was surprised to see him start the Port Vale game the other day. But again, at the weekend, I think he got an early sub. Let's see what his Champions League minutes are. But I wonder if it's still a couple of weeks too early to buy Saka. But maybe our mind has changed off the back of the Champions League. And then going into West Ham, we go, actually, Saka's a really nice differential. And he's a really good placeholder for Mo Salah. Because if you know inevitably you're going to be buying Salah again sometime soon, Saka, you know, he accrues a lot of that value in that spot. And it makes the switch easier.
Yeah, I think I'd find room for him on a wild card, you know, and just go Gabriel, Saka and Gyökeres. I just think he's about 6% owned, and you know, he's such a proven quality FPL asset over the years. So I think he's maybe the best pick in terms of differential versus his ceiling. So I would really be trying to find a way to squeeze him in, I think, if I was wildcarding. But I don't want to tell you what to do with your wildcard, though, because Arsenal defence, of course, is absolutely elite as well. They're now the best defence for expected goals conceded this season. It was Newcastle number one before they played each other on Sunday, and then now it's flipped. And Newcastle's still second best, in fairness. But yeah, Arsenal took 18 shots against them, which was the most in Game Week 6. 15 chances created as well, so... And I was going to make the exact same point that you made about Gyökeres being a sort of flat track, bully sort of player. So this upcoming run of five games, I think you've got to try and find a way to squeeze him in. But Altamada, of course, scoring the other one.
Yeah.
It feels like this season it's all about the mids. The forwards haven't been quite as exciting, have they? Like, it feels like a lot of people have kind of ended up on Haaland, Gyökeres, João Pedro as a sort of template front three, you know. The likes of Watkins haven't been doing it. Wood, of course, was incredible last season, not this season. A lot of players we hoped would do well haven't. Isak, of course, finally got the start last game week, blanked. Ekitike's been doing well. He was suspended. So it's tricky, the forwards. Are you looking at Voltimada at all, who's scored 2 and 3 now?
Yeah, my concern with him is he's not playing 90. And again, that could be a conditioning thing new to the Premier League. And obviously, Johan Visser's return after the international break, I look at and go, is he going to play with Walter Mada or instead of, or are they going to share minutes? So whilst I love the Newcastle fixtures, and I like backing Newcastle, like I have looked at a Newcastle player on wildcard, but maybe it'd be a more defensive-minded player, maybe a Pope or a Dan Byrne. I don't think I'll go there, but I do look at the forward spots like you, and I go, I don't want to have that template of Gyökeres, Haaland and João Pedro. I want Gyökeres and Haaland, sure, but is that third spot a dead spot? Do I go down to a Mark Guiu, knowing I've already bench boosted, and just have a dead spot there? Or is there a budget forward that I can rotate between? An Igor Thiago, Strand Larsen is now back fit. Is there someone, does Mateta become an option again soon? So I feel like there could become options in that spot, but I don't think it's João Pedro. And I guess we can move to Chelsea briefly now, but João Pedro is the most highly owned player in the game. He's had one shot in three matches. He's had 0.15 XG in those three games. There's no Delap, there's no Palmer. And that really affects João Pedro, who's been managing an injury himself. The Champions League distraction for Chelsea, I think, is massive because it's a competition they want to go all out in. And last season, we've seen them having those Thursday night Europa Conference games or Europa League games, and it's been a B team. Well, Chelsea can't afford to rotate heavily in the Champions League, and I think we're going to see the effects of that in the Premier League. And João Pedro's got Liverpool next, and then he's got Nottingham Forest. And that's the early kickoff in game week 8. Okay. Ordinarily, I'd look at Forest and go, good fixture. But knowing he's been carrying a knock and knowing he'll be playing for Brazil in the international break and have a long journey home, and it's the early kickoff, I think I'm happy selling João Pedro, which seems scary with his ownership. But on wildcard, he definitely doesn't make the cut.
Yeah, I think there's an opportunity to take his ownership on because I believe he is by far, I don't think it's even close, he's the most owned player in the game by a stretch. And you make a good point. That was a concern, actually, after the last international break. And I think ordinarily, if Delap was available, he would have started him over João Pedro. So it's hard to read what he's going to do when he doesn't have the options, because there is Guiu, of course, but he's clearly just not in his plans, really, this season. I wonder what's going to happen with Guiu, by the way, because I believe if he plays at all for Chelsea, he can't go on loan because it's two max teams per season. I think there is an opportunity there to go without him, especially in your case where you've already used your bench boost. So you could just go for a 4.3 mil forward dead spot and then load up your midfield. And maybe you can find room for Saka and some other big hitters in midfield instead. But yeah, Forest, I mean, last season, that would be a difficult fixture. But we have to readjust our thinking with a fixture like that. And then it's Sunderland home, game week 9. Mm-hmm. Although, again, maybe I need to adjust my thinking on that. Then there's Tottenham, Wolves and Burnley. So it's a really nice run for Chelsea the next six games.
Yeah, and Cole Palmer, if fit for that run after the international break, could become an option again. Just looking at João Pedro's international break, he plays South Korea and Japan in Asia. Like, that's a long flight home. I don't know if that's the flight time difference between, say, Japan and Brazil. But yeah, it's going to be tricky if he starts that Forest game. I'm not entirely convinced he does. So yeah, maybe an easy swerve. And yeah, Chelsea, the fixtures might be there, but the form isn't there. And they're conceding goals now too. And I look at players like Sanchez in goal, who was a really popular option early on, time to sell. Cucurella's been popular. Not for me. And I don't actually think I'd go with a Chelsea player on wildcard. And I think if you own Chelsea, even with good fixtures around the corner, short term, I think you can sell and then maybe target a Palmer longer term. So yeah, an interesting one there because they were so popular pre-season.
The only thing I will say, by the way, on that stat on João Pedro, of course they've had two red cards in two games, so that will have played into it a bit, but of course it's possible that his stats continue to be poor in the next few games, but there is that factor as well. Two reds on the bounce, Sanchez got one and then it was Chalobah last match. But yeah, Maresca also said ahead of their Champions League tie that he and Caicedo are sort of nursing issues. I wouldn't be surprised if they're still involved, but he said the same thing last game week, so that's something to keep in mind. Enzo's an interesting one. He seems to benefit from when there's no Palmer, right? He gets that license to push forward more. Scored last match. In game week 2, he got one goal, one assist when there was no Palmer. In game week 3 as well, he got one goal, one assist, no Palmer. Are you tempted to go there if you wildcard?
And one of those goals was a penalty when João Pedro was on the pitch, and we didn't see that coming. And we were all thinking João Pedro would take the pen, and Enzo did. So again, we don't know if that's the case next time they win a penalty with no Palmer, but Enzo is a tempter. I owned Enzo a lot second half of last season. I remember Cole Palmer being injured and seeing Enzo in the 10. And I like the fact he can box crash. He's a bit like a Reinders, and he gets into similar positions as Reinders, and he's got good timing and a good finish and a good engine. So Enzo is definitely a tempter for me if I don't go with João Pedro. From, say, game week 8-9 onwards. I'm really keen to see what happens with Cole Palmer's fitness, though. He is the standout. If you can get there, obviously you've got to spend a huge amount more money, but Palmer, when fit and when Chelsea are playing well, is just a joy to own in FPL. So I think that's probably the direction I'll be going. But yeah, Chelsea have taken up a lot of my headspace and thinking with FPL this season. They've been really popular. But one team that hasn't been overly popular is Crystal Palace, and they are now third in the Premier League. They are, is 18 games unbeaten. There are so many good FPL assets in that Crystal Palace team. They lose Eze, and they don't look short up front. You know, Sara and Mateta are a class act. They probably deserve a little bit more of our attention. At the back, you've got the three centre-backs that are all doing so well for points. Gehi, Lacroix and Richards, but even Daniel Munoz as well has had really good points this season, always high and wide. Crystal Palace, Oscar, are you looking at them? How many did you go for on wildcard? Moving forward, how many do you want?
I actually went none on the wildcard, you know. I would have considered Sarr, and I believe he was, I believe Glasner said he was back and available last match, but it was the first game back for him. Of course, he ended up starting and scoring, but yeah, I mean, what an elite manager he is. Like, to lose Eze and they're still better than ever. And you could say the same about Areola, right? They lost Kepa, Housen, Zabanye, Kirkes. And if anything, their defence is better. And yeah, Glasner's been unbelievable. That, yeah, you said that's 18 competitive matches unbeaten. That's 8 wins, 10 draws. And yeah, that's the longest active streak in any of Europe's top 5 major leagues. So that says it all. And on top of that, 2.92 expected goals from Palace against Liverpool, last season's champions, was top of game week 6. So, yeah, incredible. Maybe I should have gone for Sarr. I opted for Ndiaye instead because he had a couple of home games. West Ham, of course, he blanked in that game. But I opted for Ndiaye instead, which, maybe was a mistake because Sarr's underlying numbers are always so good. He always does well against Liverpool. And, they deserve to win.
Yeah, I think you made the smart choice in Ndiaye because you didn't know Sarr was ready to play. And he came off early and he wasn't ready for 90. But moving forward, it looks like he will be. And Sarr, when fit, does play every minute. My concern with Palace, though, is do they have a dip in a couple of months' time when playing the midweek games, the Europa games, really takes its toll on them? Because again, quite a small squad. Being in Europe is a big deal for Crystal Palace. I don't see them playing a B team every Thursday night. I think they're going to probably play the likes of Mateta and Sarr and Munoz and the back three. Not a huge amount of rotation. And therefore, do those minutes start kicking in? Do we start to see heavy legs come the winter period? I don't know. Yeah. Watch this space. But players like from Everton and Ndiaye, Semenyo from Bournemouth, the beauty is good teams, scoring goals, talisman often, and no European football this season. It's massive for players like Semenyo and Ndiaye. Bruno Fernandes at Man United the same. And I just wonder if that lessens the appeal of a Mateta or a Sarr.
Yeah, that's a valid point as well. Yeah, when these teams have a sort of bubble season and reach Europe, they can often massively struggle with the busier schedule than what they used to. And yeah, perhaps the lack of squad depth as well there for Palace. So yeah, that's a valid point as well. Yeah, interestingly, yeah, 3 shots Sarr took, all of those in the box. Mateta took 4 shots as well, 3 of those in the box. So great stats all round. Fun fact, Saturday of Game Week 6 was the first time that Chelsea, Liverpool and United all lost on the same day in the Premier League since April 16th, 1994. So just 31 years ago?
Wow.
Yeah, a shock result there. A Salah blank as well, right? Well played if you made the switch to Haaland like you did, Gianni, and I know lots did. I think Haaland was by far the most bought player. Vert's got the start in left wing, another blank for him. He's been really frustrating. Really thought he would be a fantastic asset, but it's just not quite happened yet. And Gakpo was benched, who I sold on the wild card, so I was pleased by that as well.
Yeah, good choice there. Mate, I actually kept Salah. I got to Haaland, but I kept Mo because I had idea of, I'm going to go without wildcard now. I'm going to commit to Haaland and Salah, and I'm going to wildcard later down the line. And already a week into that, I'm thinking, I need to nip that idea in the bud. I don't want Salah long term because but at the same time, I'm looking at wildcard teams going, actually, I could still produce a good wildcard team with Haaland and Salah. And come game week 8, do we all want Salah again? You know, I think it's Man United at Anfield and then really good run of fixtures. What's your take on Salah? Do you think he'll become an own again very soon? Because I know he's had a slow start to the season, but I remember watching the Atletico Madrid game at Anfield a couple of weeks back and seeing Salah score against, you know, one of Europe's elite defences over the last decade under Simeone. And he looked so good in that game. And I thought, yeah, we've got short memories here. Salah's still top tier and he's going to start doing it in FPL very soon. But he hasn't done it this season really so far in FPL, has he?
No, he's not got going. Yeah, he's been nowhere near worth 14.5 million he was? Yeah. And it just uses up so much money going with both. But it is a really, it's almost differential having both. Not quite. They're both about 50% owned. But in terms of managers out there that own both Haaland and Salah like yourself, it's only 18% or last game week it was. So that's almost differential in itself to have both of those in combination. But yeah, it's just a shame Salah's not doing anything close to what he did last season or the Salah we've come to know over the years. But you can never rule him out. And as you said, that Atletico game, one goal, one assist against a truly elite team shows what he still can do.
Yeah, I feel like I'm struggling to gauge it because with the reinforcements this summer, Liverpool were already the best attack in the league last season, right? They were clear. They scored the most goals, highest XG. They won the title, best attack in the league. This season, early on, it would suggest they're not the best attack in the league, right? You might look at Man City or even, there's been a couple of other teams ranked considerably higher than Liverpool for XG. But I feel like it's inevitable they will become the best attack in the league this season. If they don't, they'll be very close to it. So if you want to cover the best attack in the league, when they've got good fixtures coming up, and they've got very good fixtures coming up, the only 90-minute man and the talisman in the team is Mo Salah. All the other attacking players, no 90-minute guarantee. In fact, a lot of them, not even a guaranteed start. We saw the Gakpo benching. We've seen Wirtz benched. Ekitike and Isak are going to rotate. It feels like a no-brainer given his history, but of course it's a huge amount of money to spend. I feel like on wildcard, if you can put together a good team with Salah and Haaland, it might just be worth the punt. It's differential in itself, as you say, and I feel like Salah captaincy in the next few weeks, you've got a couple of options, which again could be fun, but I need to see something first. I think I need to see him in playing the Champions League this week and probably react to that, but it's not quite right at Liverpool in attack at the moment, is it? We expected more.
Yeah, of all those signings, it looked like one of the best transfer windows in history, but they just haven't looked cohesive. Kirk has looked a little bit lost. I think Wirtz hasn't quite got the physicality yet. So still taking time to click. But yeah, once it does, I think they'll be unstoppable and must have. But right now, I'm fairly comfortable going without Liverpool assets. I haven't got any on my wildcard.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, and a fair few had Virgil van Dijk, obviously Liverpool conceding as well. And all those shots, as you say, from Palace, they were on the ropes, Liverpool. Well-deserved win there. And Palace are definitely a team we can target. Should we be targeting still Man United, Oscar? Because they, again, underwhelmed. And so many managers felt like Bruno Fernandes was essential on wildcard because he's got all the routes to points, wins penalties, his team win penalties. He's had three now this season. Good for DEFCON, 90-minute man, no European football, good fixtures. It was all there. And you were probably unlucky, weren't you? Because that penalty miss, you know, you can't see that coming.
Brutal. Yeah, I mean, as you said, that's two missed penalties this season. No one's missed more penalties than Bruno since he made his debut. And Bumo won it. He's been very unlucky just to have one return this season in Bumo. And I do actually wonder now, does he take the next one? Mm. Probably not, but he's got a great record in Bumo. Yeah, very, very painful. And on top of that, I think he got booked, didn't he, Bruno? Plus, he finished on 11 DEFCON, so he a defensive contribution. So he was one short of at least getting the plus two there. So, that was also frustrating from Bruno. That was Amorim's 200th game as a manager across his whole career. And he's lost 17 in 33 league games with United. He only lost 14 in 167 at Sporting. So, it's bleak times, really, if you're a Man United fan. And I'm starting to wonder if maybe a change is coming. And maybe I'll just keep Bruno until he's playing as a cam under the next manager. Maybe they'll stick with him and he'll turn it around. But, of course, right now he's been playing as a deeper line centre mid. So he's been looking a bit further from points. But there is, as you say, always the penalties, corner, set pieces factor. So many routes to points. And he's actually good for DEFCONs as well. So it's not necessarily a terrible thing when he does play deeper.
Yeah, on another day, he hits his DEFCON, he scores the penalty, he's got bonus points. And from the defensive mid position, you're still laughing. It is worth noting against Brentford in open play, Bruno showed very, very little. But again, you're not relying on open play because he's got all those extra routes. So if you're on wildcard this week, potentially like me, Oscar, would you still pick a Bruno?
Yeah, unpopular take probably, but I absolutely would have him still, yeah.
Would you? Oh, I've not even drafted with him.
Like, if he scored those two penalties, and I know we're talking about ifs and buts, but he's, I think he'd be the second top scorer mid, and suddenly it's a very different conversation on Bruno, and it's such fine margins in FPL. And I think something that's really difficult in FPL is to separate the decision-making process from the actual outcome. And I think, like, the decision to go with Bruno was a sound one when, as you say, he's one DEFCON short of getting 2 points. He's just a penalty miss short of ending up on a double-digit points. He would have got bonus. Very, very close margins. And I just look at that and think, I'm okay having him for a while still.
Yeah, and but it's just 9 million is a huge amount of money for a Man United attacker that Man United just aren't scoring goals. But when they do, he is involved. I hear you. And it's 3 penalties and 6 sustainable. Like 50% of games, he's had a penalty. There's been a penalty. But we know long term that those numbers will considerably drop. Yes, United do win arguably more penalties than any other team, but they're not going to win penalties in half their games, are they?
Yeah, I mean, credit to Kelleher, by the way, for the penalty save. I think he's saved, is it 57%, I'm sure I read, which is a really, really good record. And the other Brentford player that I need to give credit to is Thiago, of course. 6 million, I think he is, unless he's risen. Got braced in the first 20 minutes. And he's now the fifth top scorer forward after that 13-pointer. Wow. Are you looking at him at all on the wildcard? I'm just looking at their fixtures. They have got City next, which is a bit horrendous. They've got West Ham after that. But then it's Liverpool. But yeah, longer term after that, the fixtures are quite nice. So he's maybe a long-term hold. Are you considering him at all, or are you looking elsewhere?
Yeah, those early fixtures put me off. I think if I go for that third forward, it's either have a dead spot in Marc Guiou or go and spend around the 6 million price point of an Iga Thiago. The one I actually like in that price point is Strand Larsen, who's now back fit because of the Wolves fixtures. And I know there's people listening going, Strand Larsen, what? Why would you
Strand
go
Larsen.
There?
Honestly,
I thought you did. Yeah, I mean, again, if we're talking about the talisman, if we're talking about good fixtures, penalty appeal, soon to be a 90-minute man, I think there's a lot to like about Strand Larsen. I actually think Wolves will turn a corner now he's back. I think I've seen enough from Wolves to suggest they'll be all right. Again, I think they were really unlucky at the weekend not to beat Spurs. I like the Strand Larsen fixtures, and he's definitely part of my thinking on if I'm going to a budget forward.
Yeah. So Brighton home next, and then it's Sunderland away, Burnley home, Fulham away. That's his next four fixtures. Yeah, you mentioned last season you had João Pedro, and there was that inflection point for me, which actually ended up kind of season defining. I went for Strand Larsen instead of João Pedro when people were going out of the way.
Yeah.
And they were about the same price, like, you know, over 5 million, under 5.5. And Strand Larsen ended up doing fantastic for me. So I'm always going to have a soft spot for him. He got a few braces for me when I had him last season. Obviously, this season, it's been a different story. Yeah, I think it was a red card. Was it game week 2 against Bournemouth? He had the injury. So there's been a few things going on, and their season's not really kick-started. Wolves as a team or him individually, but I don't dislike the Strand Larsen pick. He could potentially be a get ahead of the template sort of move.
Yeah, I think potentially new contract bounce as well. He's just signed a new deal at Wolves. I always like that narrative. But the other option for the third forward spot, this would be a very short term punt. He's in my actual team because I've not used a chip. I've still got Ollie Watkins. And I'd argue before this game week, Ollie Watkins had been the biggest disappointment of the season so far. You look at Wirtz and Watkins, they're the two that were highly owned. I own both, and they've both dropped a lot. I sold Wirtz a few weeks ago, but I kept the faith with Ollie Watkins. Using a wild card would mean I'd be selling him ahead of Burnley at home off the back of an 8-pointer. That's the main reason, actually, that I've considered not wildcarding, because I just want that 1 week of Ollie Watkins, which seems silly. The other option is you wildcard and you just keep him in, but it's just a distribution of funds. I know Gyökeres and Haaland are set and forget. If I have Watkins, I know I'd be downgrading him to a Strand Larsen after a couple of weeks. And then it's like, I've got to use money into my midfield, and it's using more transfers. But what's your take with Villa, Oscar? Have they turned a corner now? Because they hadn't scored, I think they'd scored one goal all season in the league. And then they go and score 3 versus Fulham. And Watkins looked really sharp. You could argue he was unlucky not to get the assist as well for the Buendia goal. He nearly had a double-digit haul there.
Oh, yeah, it's Burnley home, such a great fixture. And as you say, after a couple of weeks, you'd probably want to sell. They've got Tottenham in game week 8. But then after that, it's Man City and Liverpool. Mm. I'm not sure if I'd say they've turned a corner just yet. I've really been unconvinced by Villa. And I can't believe how wrong I got that one. So for context, I started the season with both Watkins and Rodgers, and I wish I had the patience you had. I suppose that I wildcarded, so it went okay, but yeah. I held him for the 5 game weeks, and of course, no goal involvements from him or Rodgers the first 5 game weeks. And of course, on the 6th one, he finally scores. Rodgers gets the assist. Yeah, but in terms of how they turned the corner, 4.97 expected goals this season does rank 2nd worst after Burnley. So
yeah,
I admire that your patience keeping them. I think I would be getting rid despite the really good Game Week 7 fixture if I was wildcarded.
Unless he's going to score. He's going to score against Burnley. I know he is, but I've probably just got to accept that. Long term, I don't want him. And I'm with you. The numbers are disappointing. And Fulham, they were 1-0 up and actually looked quite comfortable. It's just a good second half performance from Villa, but...
I mean, if you're sitting on several free transfers, which of course in your case you're not because you did the Haaland transfers, you could start with him and then sell him after 2 weeks if you're sitting on that luxury. But it's quite team dependent as well. And I think I just find the million and go for someone like Saka in midfield or someone else up front. Personally, I'd like to see sustained good performances from Villa before I even consider going back there. Maybe around game week 11, 12 because they've got like Bournemouth, Leeds, Wolves in succession. But for now, I'm staying well away from Villa myself.
They've got those Thursday night games as well, which I want to swerve if I can. I'm already wanting to buy Palace players, but ideally I look at, you know, we've spoken about Bournemouth and Brighton and Everton, and no Thursday night games matters for those middling teams, I think. Forest as well, European football for them. Are they just now a sell? Like, obviously lost to Sunderland. That was a fixture. Yeah. A lot were keeping their Forest assets for. I had Nico Williams. I was like, I'll give him one more week. There's a lot of Chris Wood owners out there. Forest feel like a sell now. Pretty much any Forest player you own other than Elliot Anderson, I think I'd be getting rid of.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Yeah, it's Newcastle away next. Then they've got Chelsea, Bournemouth, Man United. I think it's time to shift the Forest assets on. Sunderland were the only team that kept a clean sheet as well. What an unpredictable game week it was. Olderete with a 17-pointer. He was the top scorer of last game week. He got the goal, the clean sheet, DEFCON a bonus, I think it was. So that's like the dream set up for a defender. On my wildcard, you know, I was looking at Sunderland because, as I said earlier, I've been really impressed by them.
Yeah.
And I actually opted for Mukiele instead, who's the other 4 mil centre back who he'd been doing better for DEFCON.
He's slightly better for DEFCON, isn't he?
Yeah.
Slightly better, but then he's not the target at set pieces that Alderete is. Yeah. And Mukiele obviously takes all those long throw-ins.
Yeah, he's on the long throws. Maybe I was trying to be too clever there, trying to tie. I mean, I'm trying to like adjust how I'm looking at FPL this season.
I know what you mean.
Defensive contributions are such a huge factor. You know, it's a different era of FPL right now. Like back in the day, I'd have a back four of, you know, Trent, Robertson, Cancelo, James, this sort of thing. It's all about the fullbacks that had the attacking upside. Yeah. But there's been definitely a shift towards centre-backs because they're the ones that tend to get more defensive contributions. So right now, my FPL team, my defence is all centre-backs. So yeah, I've massively changed how I'm looking at that. Forest, in fairness, created 16 chances, which was the most of game week 6, but they couldn't capitalise. And they had 64.9% possession as well, which was their highest in the Premier League since their return to the Prem. But yeah, couldn't make it count. One more stat, Sunderland, 11 points from their first 6 games, that's 3 wins, 2 draws and a loss, is their most in the top flight at this stage since 1967. And that's the most for a promoted side after 6 games in the Prem since West Ham had the same total back in 2012.
Oh, wow. I didn't think West Ham. I was thinking maybe Wigan back in the day. I remember having a good start. But Sunderland, that's 2 points a game pretty much they're averaging at the moment. That's some form. And they've spent so well in the window. It's a very different team to last year. And we've still not seen, really, we've not had enough time for this Sunderland squad to gel. So like many think that there'll be a decline very soon, but I would argue that actually these are a load of new players that haven't played together much. I think they're going to continue playing really good football. And I look at Sunderland versus Man United this weekend and I don't easily call that football match, showing how far Sunderland have come. But yeah, their defence is great. Alderete and Mukiele are the two standout 4.0s, I think. I mean, Rodon at Leeds, Goodmanson, Esteve have all been popular. But I think if he's going to a 4 million defender, you go to one of them. And I still like Mukiele a lot because he's slightly better at those defensive contributions. And worth noting, those long throws, I often think with the long throws, you rarely see an assist from a long throw because it's often the second contact of a long throw that goes in. It's like flick on, then goal. But nonetheless, it's been really interesting monitoring long throws and the rise of the centre-back part of the reason why I want a wild card is I've got too many fullbacks. I've got Munoz. I should have Richards. I've got Porro. I should have a centre back. I had Nico Williams. Three fullbacks there. You know, they're just not getting the points. We saw draws for six teams, Oscar. The headlines, I guess, from Spurs, Wolves, Leeds, Bournemouth, Everton, West Ham, the standout sort of points there. I just want to note that obviously West Ham with a new manager, we're going to start seeing some clean sheets, I think, under Nuno. And the fixtures after Arsenal for West Ham are good. Most of their defenders have dropped from 4.5 to 4.4. Again, as much as I love a Diouf, who was amazing against West Ham on Monday night, I go, yes, I'm going to get some assists from Diouf, but actually, I'm probably going to get more points through Defcon from a Kilman. So really like Kilman as an option at 4.4. And then for Bournemouth, 6 out of 6, the only centre-back defender, the only player in the game that's had 6 Defcon from 6. Senesi has the crown. He's a bit of a no-brainer pick at the moment, isn't he?
Yeah, oh, he's been fantastic. Yeah, Tarkowski, last season, no one got defensive contributions more regularly than him among defenders. And yeah, it was the first time he didn't against West Ham. Yeah, Diouf's an interesting one because going back to that point, it's the centre-backs that get the defensive contributions, but he's got 4 assists in his opening 6 games, which is 2 more assists than any defender. And as you say, he's 4.4 mil, so maybe he's like the sort of player you can make an exception for. Yeah, it was Keane that scored Everton's goal there, which was off a Garner ball in. And Dyer Blank, as I said, I had him. Shrewsbury Hall getting suspended. Oh,
that's what's tipped me over the edge on wildcard.
Really?
I think that's the one thing that's tipped me over to now I might need to do it is the Shrewsbury Hall suspension.
There's always a tipping point, isn't there? Sometimes it can be the smallest thing has the biggest butterfly effect on your season.
Yeah.
5 yellow cards in his last 5 games. Crazy. Didn't get one in game week 1 and then he gets yellows in 5 games in a row. Mm. And now he's suspended, so he misses Palace home. And that means we won't see him until after the international break against City away.
Yeah, and whilst we love Palace, I'd fancy Everton Palace to be a game where Everton can quite easily score. Palace off the back of a European fixture, Everton with the home advantage. You could see Shrewsbury Hall was clearly frustrated that he'd picked that yellow card up. And obviously, 5 in a row is bad, but some are for quite silly things, and he might argue some have been, you know, he's been a little bit hard done by. And maybe I have too, because it's forcing me into wildcard. Bournemouth, Oscar. Semenyo, we've been talking about Semenyo a lot in the last few weeks. Again, ticking over with points. Has he gone up in price too much now that if you don't own him, like, it's gone from start of the season at 7 million. Yeah. I think he must be 7.8 now. Like, I look at Semenyo and go, am I now priced out of Semenyo? Like, am I getting 7.8's worth of value, or do I go spend 8 million on a Foden and go different? Yeah. I'm not sure where I land on Semenyo now. I mean, clearly he's great if you own him and you're not going to be selling him, but I'm not sure if he's necessarily a buy.
Yeah, I think you can make the case to go about him. I think him and João Pedro are the ones highly owned, but you can make a case to go in without them. But it was a free kick goal as well. It just makes it more and more difficult to look past him. But yeah, I think he's had more price rises than returns. So definitely there's a lot of hype there.
Did you see the free kick? He went under the wall, but there was a draft excluder there. But the draft excluder wasn't in the right position. So he went under the wall and still found its way on target and scored.
Yeah, this is it. Like now he's taking free kicks. Of course, he scored a penalty this season and that was without Clivert on the pitch. And I think that's still a contentious one. Does Semenyo take the next penalty if Clivert's on the pitch, given Clivert was the main man for Pens last season? Mm-hmm. He could be moving up the pecking order now. You know, Semenyo could sort of be saying to him, look, I'm taking this free kick, because the two of them were standing over the free kick. And it could be one of those, like, Semenyo is the main man. He's their talisman. And it might be a case of him saying, look, I'm taking this free kick, I'm taking this penalty. But yeah, rode on with a goal, as you said earlier. Like, it was a good gimmick for the 4 mil defenders. And we're spoiled for choice this season. Like, in previous seasons, we've had like a huge lack of 4 mil defenders and you kind of take whoever you can get, you know, like Ben Narek last season sort of thing, and you don't expect much, but they've been brilliant. I think Alderete is one of the top scoring defenders. He's certainly in team of the season already, if not the top scorer. Maybe it's Senesi and then Alderete. But yeah, he hit defensive contribution points again, 100% record. And this is how powerful defensive contributions are. He concedes twice. He did get the assist, but he got the defensive contribution points as well, and he ends up on 7 points, including bonus, despite conceding twice. 13.5 DEFCONs per 90 is more than any defender. Next best is actually Mukiele, 12.75, Tarkowski 12.2, Van Dijk 12, Anderson 11. So yeah, when I was using my wildcard, I was looking at the defensive contributions largely. I did go Gabriel, but then after that, it was, you know, Senesi, Mukiele, Anderson. I kind of tried to build my wildcard around that. I don't know if that's how you're approaching your wildcard.
Yeah, I have to. It's too easy at the moment with these centre backs. It feels so obvious, and they win twice, right? They don't only get the two extra points, but if they've had a good game or kept a clean sheet or had an attacking return, and we've seen that a lot with Senesi, you're also very likely therefore to get bonus points, because the bonus points also rewards tackles, interceptions, blocks, clearances. So you're winning twice. Like Senesi, as soon as he got that assist at the weekend, I was like, oh, okay, he'll definitely get bonus. Even though it's a 2-2 game, you know, there was four assists and four goals. I knew Senesi was going to get bonus because he's so good at all the other underlying stuff, which is rewarded in the defensive contribution points too. So yeah, it feels too good at the minute. And I think centre-backs this season, it might change. The momentum shift could change to full-backs if the likes of Daniel Munoz and Diouf can, you know, get loads of goals and assists. But as things stand, the quality of fullbacks, certainly in the Premier League, or certainly the attacking quality, has dipped in recent years. You know, gone are the days of a João Cancelo, a Trent, a Marcos Alonso, that, you know, these guys were getting attacking returns every other week. There isn't really a fullback doing that at the moment, other than you mentioned Diouf, who's, I think, leading the way for assists this season, not just in defenders, but all over with four.
Yeah, and I remember I last saw you, it was just before Game Week 1, we were at that FPL meetup and we were all sort of unsure that how the defensive contribution is going to change the game this season. Yeah. And my early impressions are they are extremely powerful, and I think you have to target them going forward. Maybe things will change again, but right now that's where I'm looking in terms of transfers and defence, besides the exceptions where you're talking about really elite defences like Arsenal, but then yeah, even Gabriel got DEFCON points last match. Van Dijk's sort of that sweet spot where he is getting them as well as being a good defence. Yeah, we'll have to see how things shake out.
Do you think it's the same for midfielders? You think midfield, because midfielders, we're not,
yeah,
obviously they need 12 defensive contributions, not 10. Mm. But I remember looking at last season's data and actually thinking, oh, midfielders are going to benefit even more than centre-backs. We've not necessarily seen that, but also obviously midfielders, there are a lot of other options that you can pick which go and get those attacking returns. But players like Xhaka, you know, they're getting attacking returns on all set pieces. He's got a few assists, but doing really well in DEFCON 2 for 5 million. And again, I think we're still learning about the sweet spot for a midfielder. For budget defenders, we know it's centre-backs that get DEFCON. For midfielders, we're not entirely sure if we should still be chasing upside or not.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just looking at the top scorer mids, and yeah, to its credit, it has really opened up an extra pool of players. You know, like Caicedo, I know he's got some attacking returns and so on, but he's the fourth top scorer mid. Gravenberch is fifth. You know, these guys were barely hitting 100 points, if that, last season. You know, players like Ndiaye, attacking, but also really good for defensive contributions. You know, Rice has done well, Zubimendi. So, yeah, Xhaka, as you mentioned, these sort of guys are up there as well for points. So, yeah, I think it's made it a bit murkier in terms of where we should actually be investing our money. Like, do you just go for the cheap defensive mids and count on defensive contributions? Or maybe you're of the opinion that's a boring way to play and you just stick with your attacking players, whether that's the mids or fullbacks. Yeah, it's really interesting how things have shaped up so far this season.
Oh, this is why a draft with Salah and Haaland is possible, because there's so many good cheap players doing well in midfield and at the back. You can have a fair few 5 million assets this season. So yeah, still learning that, but that's why I've got that sort of Salah monkey on my shoulder saying, oh, just do it. Just go for the double premium. Yeah, we'll see where I land.
It's another big week of midweek football as well. There's 9 Premier League teams that play in European matches, and it feels like a good time to hold and be patient with those free transfers. But it is also a Friday deadline, so make sure you're ready with those decisions a little bit earlier than usual.
Yeah, I've got no doubt those midweek fixtures, they'll play a big part in our thinking. So it's probably wise to wait for this week's FPL pod, because Kelly, Jules and Sam, and there'll be one of Jules' incredible European roundups as well. So wait for that, then make your decisions. Remember, it is a Friday night deadline, of course. So we want to be doing Friday morning transfers, but don't wait too long.
And if you haven't already done so, don't forget to join the FPL pod mini league. The code for that is XY6XPL. Johnny, I've really enjoyed this. It's been great chatting. Good luck in Game Week 7, whatever you do.
Yeah, mate, and very good luck with that bench boost as well. I've got no doubt that your arrows will be green. Listener, I hope your arrows will be green, and we'll see you very soon.